From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You may know my guest, actor Richard Jenkins, from his role as the dead father in Six Feet Under, or his films with the Coen brothers, or his films with the Farrelly brothers, or his films with Mike Nichols, or his films with David O. Russell. But you will know him in his first, a big starring role in a great new film, The Visitor. First of all, Richard, I'm tired of stalking you at film festivals, so thanks for finally doing this.
It's my pleasure, Elvis.
One of the things you told me, at one point Viggo Mortensen took your picture.
My headshot.
Yeah. How'd that happen?
Well, Viggo and I were both starting off, and we both had the same manager, Bill Tresh. And Viggo is a photographer, a wonderful photographer. And Bill said, go take his picture in Central Park. So we went out in the park, and Viggo had his camera. And he said, I've never done this before. And I said, well, I don't know. And he just took some shots. And that's how I met Viggo. That's 20 years ago, yeah.
So much of the stuff I think of you, and I think of you as being a great ensemble player. One of the first time you really registered for me is in Little Nikita as the father.
My gosh. I had hair and everything.
But that was real because that was an actor directing you. That was Richard Benjamin.
Yeah.
And you and River Phoenix and Sidney Poitier. But it was a really interesting thing to see you in because just watching you work with the other actors, there seemed to be a real excitement in that for you.
That was like my second film, my third film, and it was incredible to do that with Sidney Poitier. I mean, he was so great. I mean, he was so generous and it was kind of a blur. It just seemed like a surreal almost to be doing it, to go right from the theater to, I think I'd done The Witches of Eastwick or something, and then to this. I spent the first 3 weeks trying to get over the fact that I was making a movie with Sidney Poitier. You know, it was just amazing because I grew up as a kid watching movies and watching this guy and all these guys, and it was like, you know, how do you do that? I mean, how do you get into one of these things in a movie? And then you find yourself in one. Playing opposite one of these guys you grew up watching, and it's intimidating and it's bizarre. It's kind of an outer body experience. But
it's interesting too because in The Visitor, particularly your scenes, the drumming scenes. I mean, that feels like theater stuff to me. Like, you know, figuring out who the character is through the way he expresses himself physically. Because at the beginning of the film, we see him trying to master the rudiments of the piano, and there's just a kind of a fortitude, a kind of rigidity that Western music calls for that African does not. Mm-hmm. And it's just so great watching you find yourself.
I played the drums when I was young.
Did you?
And I had no facility for it. I didn't. I had no.
And yet you played them.
But I loved them. I loved them.
What kind of stuff did you play?
I tried, you know, Jada. You know, it was just awful. But I to this day, I love the drums. I love watching drummers. My son is a drummer. My son's a wonderful drummer. It's like I feel like a stalker. I ask him to play for me. Let me watch you play drums. I think The Visitor, to be able to do that, you know, to pretend I was getting better at the drums was something I always hoped would happen in real life that never did. The guy who taught us, Muhammad Ali is his name. He's and that trio that Tarek was playing with, that's his trio. He plays with them.
Okay.
And he plays American standards on the djembe with these guys. And he plays everything. He plays songs he writes. And it's amazing to see him do this, to see him riff and play this stuff.
Actually, at this point, I ask you to talk a little bit about what The Visitor is about, just so it doesn't seem like it's a tutorial on the drum that somebody's going to see on TV late at night.
It is. It's a story of a professor who's kind of stuck in life. His wife has died 7 years earlier, and he is sent to New York City to present a paper that he says he co-wrote, but he didn't really do much on the paper. And he has an apartment that he's kept for years and hasn't been there since his wife died. And things happen over a 2-week period that absolutely changes life.
Talking to Richard Jenkins, it's The Treatment. Of course, he's starring in The Visitor, which is now on DVD. It's funny because so much of that movie plays to me kind of like a metaphor for being in theater or being in a movie. You come into a situation where you don't know anything. You have to immerse yourself in it anyway. And you're around a bunch of strangers, and that sort of way the strangers become family.
That's exactly right. You know, and Tom McCarthy, the writer-director of
who's also an actor too, Tom McCarthy.
Yeah, and we had 2 weeks of rehearsal, I think, for a lot of reasons, but one of them was so we could become friends before we started to shoot the movie.
Really?
Yeah, and it was amazing because none of us knew each other. We were all strangers, and by the end, you know, we were friends and are to this day. So it was a very sly move on Tom's part to do that.
Because I wonder for you, because you played a number of characters who have to sort of get past their physical discomfort, how you find a way to do that so differently, because that discomfort can be as expressive as somebody's having some grace as well.
Yeah, I think we all understand that in our lives. Some of us do it differently or deal with it differently, but we all understand that, I think. I mean, it's a common thing. When you watch a performance, you see the physicality of it. I do, anyway. And you watch the great actors, and they sometimes look different. And, I mean, really look different without any effort. It just seems that they've taken on something that they didn't have in the role before, you know. So, yeah, it is important.
But you must figure, like, in playing this character and playing this professor who, you know, comes in with a fair amount of resentment and with a wall erected around him, except for when he's attempting to concentrate on the piano. Again, there's a great line that I don't want to give away that the piano teacher has for you.
Yeah.
That's really because – and that's one of the fun things about the film, too, is the humor comes from nowhere.
It does. I mean,
you don't really expect it in a lot
I know,
of these.
Yeah. It's Tom – I mean, Tom wanted – he didn't want this to be, you know, a dirge. This is life, and there's a lot of humor in life and a lot of sadness in it. So there was quite a bit, actually. Some just kind of happened and some was planned, you know.
And you were saying before that you don't go to see your movies.
That's
a heavy sigh. Wait a second there.
Because it's kind of a lie, actually. I mean,
I've seen an actor lying. We've never seen that on the show before.
I've seen the last three I've been in, but I'm not crazy about doing it. No, it doesn't. It's not something I'm comfortable with, but. You know, I don't.
But why would you not be comfortable? Because I would just think, as somebody with theater training, somebody who's used to being in an ensemble, that you would watch these movies as much as sort of see what the way the director is using you and the way the other actors are communicating with you as anything else.
That's a very good point, and that's why I should see movies. That's a very good point, and I have no answer for that because, you know, the truth is you should see the films you do. At least see the way they're shooting the film you're in. So you know where you fit into this whole thing, you know, what angles they're shooting, how they're shooting, what they're using, the way they frame stuff. I mean, it's a good thing to know. I don't know. I just haven't gotten over the fact that I can't stand looking at myself. So,
well, that's why I'm on radio. See, that's not a problem to deal with. But I just wonder, too, for an actor who's a director, somebody like Tom McCarthy, who really understands how to make ensembles work. I mean, because a station agent could almost be a play.
Yeah.
And so much of this could be a play, too, yet there's not nearly as much dialogue as there is in the stage. So this is almost like some sort of performance piece where a lot of it is expressed through music or through looks or through a lot of silence.
Yeah, that's right. It's true. But you know what he does? I think he does. He really speaks in – this is really a film because the camera does hear what you – this is what movies can do that nothing else can do. The stage can do some things you can't do in film. I mean if you pick up a Kleenex box, you say, you know, this is a car. And the audience will go, okay, that's a car on the stage. But you can't do that in film. You got to have the car. So, but what film can do is it can really, I mean, for me, it goes in there so tight. It's like you walk into a room and the last guy in the room you notice, film can make you watch. And it's very hard to do that in any other medium. And Tom does that with this movie, I think. I mean, he follows these people around and watches them in a way that you it's so intimate that you feel like you're window peeping or something. You know, it's like you shouldn't be looking at these people. They're going to turn around all of a sudden and go, who are you? You know, and that's – I love when films do that.
It's the treatment. We're talking to actor Richard Jenkins. His new film – I'm sorry, his film on DVD now, which he stars is The Visitor. There's a moment early in the film that's really key for me, just what this film is when your character enters the apartment in the dark that he knows, and then the lights come on. He doesn't know anything in this place. That's a great moment.
Good. It is. It is. It's like the world changes right there. Yeah, he knows everything, and then he knows nothing.
He's used to sort of, in effect, walking through life with his eyes closed. Yeah. And that scene pretty much spells it out in a really beautiful and subtle way, I thought.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's very good.
What was that like your first day on the set? As the saying goes, being at the top of the call sheet.
It was a little frightening, I have to say. A little, I was nervous because you realize that, you know, if this isn't any good, it's your fault. And I thought Tom saw that. I mean, I thought he called me. He saw the dailies the next day and called and said, I think we got a movie here. So, I mean, he put me at ease. I think he saw the first day that I was maybe a little anxious. I tried to, you know, get beyond that. But from then on, it was great.
But it had to be in the situation in a starring role where you're being directed by somebody who understands what it's like to be in front of the camera. That must have made it a lot easier for you, too.
Well, it was. I mean, I've worked with a lot of directors who are not actors who are amazing with actors. But you know, Tom treated us the way he likes to be treated, which is, you know, he kind of helped create the atmosphere in which we could do our work. And which was another thing that, Elvis, that I didn't think about, but I was in a position where I got to kind of not dictate but help create the vibe on the set, you know, because I was there all the time. And I like a relaxed atmosphere. I think most people do. And it was nice to be able to contribute to that.
You really were a collaborator in that way. And again, that seems to me to radiate from this film feeling like it's theater. Like it's a play in that sense where everybody is communicating with everybody else, and it lends itself to a kind of understanding of what's going on at all times.
Hmm.
And that movies don't often do. I mean, movies can feel kind of piecemeal, and this must have felt to you like a big sense of involvement from start to finish on this.
Tom is incredibly collaborative, and you know, and yet he knows what he wants out of his movie, and he will not be deterred. So,
and what did he tell you he wanted from the film at the outset?
Well, he kind of said, let's see where put these two people together, let's see what happens. You know, it's like he didn't say, this is how I want the film to be, but it was kind of an exploration as we began, you know. But he always kept it, you know, on the track he wanted it to go on. If I did something that he thought was, he would say to me sometimes, a little too Richard.
A little too Richard.
No, maybe a little physical in a time when I shouldn't have been, you know.
That's funny because I think of you as being a really physically expressive actor. That's what I'm saying. When you're playing these guys who are kind of tense and they finally let go, you can really see it.
Yeah, that's – and when I finally do let go, I found myself almost flailing. Not really flailing, but you know, it was interesting. It was just something that happened. But Tom wanted – I mean, it's the guy in the back of the room that you don't notice that that the only way you will is if the camera goes through the room and says, let's look at him. And, you know, that's, you know, you just have to trust that, that it's enough.
Except that he is a guy who wants to be paid attention to.
He does. He's not given up. He doesn't go through life. He just doesn't know how to do it. And he doesn't know where to look for it. You know, it's like he's looking for different answers in the same place and it doesn't work.
And that's a part that calls for an enormous amount of physical articulation. That's why I was wondering for you physically where the performance here comes from.
I always think of Walter as not wanting to make a mistake in the beginning. And physically, I just didn't want to. I tried to be as still as I could be because I didn't want to call attention to myself, and I didn't want to make a mistake. I didn't want to do the wrong thing, or it's a little thing I thought of when I was doing it. It probably has nothing to do with the character in the film, but it was something I understand, and you know, and to trust yourself enough just to be still.
We'll take a break. My guest is actor Richard Jenkins. His film, a great starring role on DVD, is The Visitor. It's The Treatment. More to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest is the star of The Visitor, but he's also starring in the new Coen Brothers film, his third with the Coens,
Burn
After Reading. And I happen to be one of the, apparently the few fans of Intolerable Cruelty, but it's a movie I like a great deal. And again, this is somebody who wants to be the cock of the walk and has to sort of cede that territory to somebody else.
It just is not. You mean Intolerable Cruelty?
Yes.
Yes, he does not have the goods, but it's just, boy, he tries hard.
And so desperately, and just leans across the table like he owns everything. And again, it's so much fun to watch the way you figure these guys out physically.
Well, the only thing I could think of is, couldn't she find a better lawyer? That's the only thing I could find when I was doing it.
You can say that on both sides, though. And she chooses both these guys for
a
reason.
I know, she does. She's no fool in this movie. She knew exactly what she was doing.
But how much fun is it to play? Because in each of these Coen Brothers movies that you've done, but all their movies, they're all about a score that nobody ever gets.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, these guys are, you know, they write these characters and they don't pull punches. I mean, they don't, you know, they write who they write and you play who they write. And that's the movie. And it's like not, you know, they don't give in at any time in this movie. They don't say, oh, okay, we'll make him this or we'll make her that, because, you know, you always hear this movie. The audience will want to see, or I don't think that ever crosses Joel and Ethan's lips. I mean, I don't think that phrase is ever, you know, they make their movies, you know, that's what they do. And that's what they're supposed to do. That's the nice thing about it is, and they've been able to do that for all these years, you know.
But their movies play at best like ensemble pieces too. I mean, a lot of these films could be theater in terms of the way the characters are put in the room, the way the dialogue moves. I mean, they're very much like, certainly the films you've done with the screwball comedy.
And that's what it feels like on the set, a true ensemble piece with all of the three films I've done. Yes, it's just we're all actors and working on a film together. You know, that's what it is. That's the atmosphere that's on the set with these guys. You know, you don't feel like, oh, everybody's just an actor. And, you know, they have a very relaxed set and they get a lot of work done quickly.
They have to, because everybody speaks so fast in those movies. That seems to be, to me, the toughest thing to do, to have to speak that quickly and still get character across.
Well, you don't think of it as speaking. I don't know, maybe it's the way they write, that's how it just kind of comes out of your mouth. You know, it's I don't, you know, I never thought of myself as speaking quickly. I was just so in love in Burn After Reading that I love listening to her talk.
But still, and even in that situation too, between the two things that happen so often in those films, the characters talk too fast and they can't help expressing themselves too much, much away.
Why, you look at George Clooney in that movie. I mean, he just, he's intolerable. I mean, in Burn After Reading, I mean, sure. He just says things you want to, if you slowed down a minute and thought about it, you might not say that, which is, you know, and that maybe that's why they all talk so fast. Same with Frances McDormand's character. I said, you know, if you ever stopped and thought about what you were going to say, I said, you'd be a totally different person. So, you know, it's great.
But the fun thing about that, too, is that they're often saying these things that are so revelatory about themselves and nobody's listening to them.
No, but they don't even hear it themselves. I mean, they just keep on going.
I mean, that's what I mean. You know, starting with them, they don't really, yeah. They're not paying attention to what they're saying, but nobody else is listening to them either.
No, everybody's got their own agenda in these movies. Everybody has their own, you know, they live in their own world and nobody else is allowed in. I just love working with them.
I imagine for somebody who's played stage comedy to the extent that you have, that must be really welcoming, the idea of character being that strongly defined and in that kind of way that seems to me to be kind of distinctly American.
That's good. It is. It's true. It's very true. It's like you do. I'm going to say there's not a lot of arcs in these characters that I've played in Joel and Ethan's movies, because they are who they are. And, you know, it's kind of like life. You know, there's not, I mean, a lot of movies like The Visitor, people change and they do grow in it. But in Joel and Ethan's movies that I've been in, we are just kind of who we are. And it's very cool to play. It's very cool to play. I know when we did The Man Who Wasn't There was the first film I did with him. I remember this character had a drink with him all the time. They just said, they don't write anything that's not, there's a reason for everything. And I finally said in the last scene, I said, well, it's 8 o'clock at night after dinner. He should be just drunk. And they said, great.
Now, are they guys who really understand how to talk to actors as well? Because we've had a few people here on the show who've talked about the fact that when you get a Coen script, it's the same thing you get. I mean, there are no script changes. That's what you get.
No, they don't change. You really not. No, I can't remember having a rewrite or anything. But they let you do your work. I mean, they really encourage you to do your work. That's what, you know, it's nice. They hire you because they want you to bring what you have to the role. I found them to be really generous with that. And if you have ideas, they want to see them. They really do.
It's a treat when we're talking to actor Richard Jenkins about apparently his entire career, which includes The Visitor, which is now on DVD. We can't sit here and talk without me, since you got your start in theater, without talking about Mike Nichols and what your first conversation with him must have been like when you first met with him to work on Wolf, which is a small part but pretty crucial.
You know, this is true. This is what happened. He's amazing. First of all, he's incredibly funny and articulate. As somebody who's worked with him for years said, I've never heard him repeat himself. It's that, I mean, he's really,
oh my
but
God.
We were doing Wolf, and I played this detective, and he said, what kind of a detective do you think he is? I mean, what kind of a man do you think he is? And I said, well, I don't think he's very good at his job. I think that's something that when I read this thing, he's like a little beat behind everything. And he said, yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so we were shooting a scene, and all of a sudden, my phone rang in the desk in the police station, and it wasn't supposed to ring. And Mike Nichols calls from the other room, and I mean, this is, and he said, he called my name, the character's name, I don't know. He said, your mother's on line two. So I picked the phone up. There's nobody there, and I just start talking, and I said, I don't know. I said, yeah, Ma, what do you want? No, Mom, you don't put the, you put the television on three, not the cable box. And we went out for that. I said, okay, look, Mom, I'll fix it when I get home, okay? Yeah. What are we having tonight? Okay. Again? Okay, Mom. Anyway, I hung up, and he walked in the room. He goes, oh, you live with your mother. I said, oh, my God. And that's how he works. I mean, and that's how this is a cop that lives at home with his mother.
Wow. I mean,
amazing.
It must be incredible to get that kind of challenge when you think you're just there to do this one piece and have that thing thrown at you.
It's a little frightening, but you kind of go with the flow. You know, it's Mike Nichols. But that's what he's like. He's very smart. I just thought that was so impressive for him to say, let's see if we can find an answer to this question through an improv without telling me we're going to do this, you know, just letting the phone ring. So.
And that's the case. You get to both work with Mike Nichols, who you must have idolized, and Jack Nicholson, who's a movie star too. So that must have been kind of an interesting environment for you to have been in.
It was. It was incredibly. And the thing I found out about Jack, which I had done Witches of Eastwick with him earlier, he's a really hard worker. I mean, his script is like, it looks like a novel. He's got so much written in it about what he's doing. And he gives a ton of thought to what he does. And, you know, I know we have the impression of Jack as kind of a carefree,
bon vivant.
Yeah, bon vivant. And he is a really hard worker.
No. Speaking of Witches of Eastwick, I guess I can't go too much further without talking about Hollywood Tales. I went to the Laugh or Die website, and you've got a very interesting little piece on that. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I did. Actually, I did three of them. Hollywood Tales by Richard Jenkins, talking about just all these lies about Witches of Eastwick, Sea of Love, and Intolerable Cruelty. I did three of them, yeah. Adam McKay, who wrote and directed Step Brothers, and Will Ferrell, that's their website, Funny or Die, and they asked me if I would do these. So well, I said, sure. And one of the writers wrote them with Adam, and I kind of messed around and changed some stuff, and they said, okay. So we did these three things where I said I had an affair with, I don't know, Michelle Pfeiffer's daughter or something. Michelle was like 22 at the time. It was just Jack Nicholson shot me in the back or something. I don't know what it was.
It's really funny stuff. And the kind of bored deadpan you play with is really just kind of a wonderful.
Well, he's the actor that, you know, thinks he knows everything and knows nothing. I mean, we've all run into these guys who, you know, they got the lowdown. They know the way the world works, you know. He's clueless.
The complete lack of self-awareness in this
yes,
guy.
Absolutely.
It's just yeah. – and what was your first meeting with Adam like? Because that was a situation where, you know, you've got Will Ferrell and John Reilly, C. Reilly, who worked with him before. And there's kind of this world that you had to enter into.
Yeah, it was. It was, again, a little scary. But I loved Adam McKay. I loved him. I thought he was – I just think he's – I mean, if you're going to do a lot of that's improv, and they do, anybody uses a lot of the script too, but it's he said, well, I like to go through it twice as written and then jump off. I said, twice? I don't remember going through it twice. I mean, maybe once, but I don't remember twice. But he makes you feel like, you know, you're not going to make a mistake. Don't worry about it. You know, I mean, come on, don't worry about it. It's just something that happens. So it was amazing to watch those guys. I mean, it was incredible. Incredible.
Talking to Richard Jenkins, he's starring in The Visitor. That comedy is about territorial comedy because it's just so immature. They basically have to stake a claim to territory. And you're asked to be the mediator in this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's incredible because that kind of, you know, improv comedy also can become really confrontational. You know, it can be who tops them. Never did it get like that.
Even though the characters are like that.
Yeah, never. No. I mean, they did it as characters, but they still gave and took as characters. Incredibly generous. Will Ferrell is incredibly generous. He wants everybody to be really good. And John is an amazing guy, an amazing actor. So you know, you could see how it could be a real tough shoot if the people involved didn't have the right point of view about doing this. I mean, I just was impressed constantly.